You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a warm welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. Good to have you with us. Looking ahead to the action on Tuesday on this edition of the podcast, where we're going to be previewing racing from Goodwood and also from Kempton. I hope you can join us live on Racing Radio for all of the day's meetings. Once again, it's Bobby Beavers, Andy Holding and John O'Connell, your team in the studio throughout the course of the day. And joining myself, Sam Norris, on today's edition of the podcast is the aforementioned Mr. O'Connell to spin through the Monday jury and a couple of races on Tuesday. John, how are you?
Very well. And yourself?
Good. Yeah, not too bad at all. Enjoy the weekend's racing. Obviously, it was a low-key weekend of racing, but as we're going to touch on in the Monday jury, that there were one or two horses that yeah, caught the eye.
Certainly were. A couple of good races, good performances in handicaps as well. There's a few others we'll mention later on in the Monday jury questions. But for one that's traditionally more of a week or a quieter Saturdays, it was... there were a few good talking points.
Yeah, very much so. And of course, building up this weekend, we've got Sprint Cup on the way at Haydock, which is always a great renewal, and plenty of people will be hoping that we're going to see Harry Angel back on song after what unfortunately went wrong last time.
Yeah, the stalls problem at Royal Ascot, but it's a strong race.
Yep.
A couple of horses have been supplemented today. James Garfield, we knew was going to be, but to dance a lot as well has been put into the mix. So it's a good test for Harry Angel on Saturday. It's a strong contest.
Yes.
Befits a Group 1 prize.
Indeed, very much so. But let's look back before we look forward, as it were, and tackle the Monday jury as we do on Tuesday's podcast every week. And we begin with one of those aforementioned eye catchers this weekend, and it's Too Darn Hot, who won the Solario Stakes at Sandown. Now, this race last year produced the winner of the Derby and the winner of the Irish 2000 Guineas, with Massar beating Romanized Home. And this is another horse that's got to have classics on the agenda for next year.
Yeah, I was really impressed. It's hard not to be impressed by this one on Saturday. Really impressive. The maiden win there last month, the form is probably nothing special from that, but it got a perfect introduction, and it was well back that day, and it was telling how strong it was in the market on debut at Sandown. Back again, dropping a furlong on trip, which I wasn't worried about beforehand, but I thought they'd stick at the mile, but it got away with it. Morden got away with it. It looked for a handful of strides halfway. It took a bit of driving along to get his act together, but it was really strong. And if it had been a mile race on Saturday, it would have won a wide margin, even more impressively than it was anyway. And I think it's very, very hard not to be impressed by that horse, given as well, pedigree-wise, most of the relations are damned. They were better as 3-year-olds and even 4-year-olds as well. So he's done an awful lot, this horse has, for a 2-year-old.
Yeah, very much so. And it's yet another one in Andrew Lloyd Webber's colours. And he doesn't have any bad horses in these colours.
No, I suppose with the money he's got, they're gonna afford to do breeding. But they've done well.
Yeah,
they've done well.
Even some of the richer owners sometimes have the odd dirt here and there.
And
he just doesn't
scale.
Seem to have any. Yeah,
it's much smaller scale for the Lloyd Webbers. I don't think he's into his racing so much, but there's a chance that this horse can really get him interested, especially Epsom next year. I know his wife is big into the whole horse business, but yeah, they've certainly got one to be going for next year. Hopefully for the connections, they'll have a bit better luck.
Yes,
Epsom-wise next spring, because they've missed a few chances, whether it be injury or bad luck in running, especially in the Oaks in the last few years.
Yes, indeed. Of course, Larty Dow had to miss that engagement this year. And across the Irish Sea, we had 10 Sovereigns, who was another big eye catcher of the weekend over the sprint trip. But again, he was visually very, very impressive.
Yeah, much speedier looking. Whereas the first one we mentioned, Too Darn Hot, I can see that being a Derby horse next year, no problem at all. This one, the Aidan O'Brien one, probably more maximum, I would have thought, Guineas horse. Bit boring, actually, Sam, because I'd like to sort of be a bit, not negative for the sake of it, obviously, but I'd like to sort of pick holes in them. But it was very hard to pick holes in the two performances on Saturday. I probably preferred Too Darn Hot overall. I think he won the stronger race with more depth to it. But again, you could knock 10 sovereigns and very, very speedy type. Coming off a very quick turnaround, made his debut only last
week. Yeah, of course.
Just over the last few weeks. So, two really, really interesting juvenile performances. So we just mentioned at the start of the podcast that it's generally a quiet Saturday, but those two performances certainly lit things up.
Indeed, and from the juveniles to the other end of the age spectrum, and one of the senior campaigners, Take Cover, who won the Beverly Bullet for the second year in succession, obviously their big race of the year. 11 years old now, Take Cover, and these horses, they are favourites for a lot of people. A lot of people have a lot of time for them.
Yeah, I think David Griffith's handling this horse has been absolutely fantastic. I think he's done just a simply brilliant job with this horse. He's running to the same sort of excellent figures than he was 7 years ago, which is a fantastic achievement to do that.
Because he has a big break every year, the horse, as well.
Yeah.
He hasn't stood loads of racing to say that he's 11 years old.
He's just done really well. I think he inherited the horse when the horse was a five-year-old or a four-year-old. I think the horse was an all-weather horse when he first got his first career starts back in the day. But his performance when he won at Newbury back this time last year, late September last year, was a great performance, and I thought that's probably the best we'll see of the horse as a 10-year-old then.
Yeah.
But this year, another great run behind Batash at Goodwood, and that was as good as we'll see Batash in his career. I think that was a superb effort. A little bit of dip last week at York, but that was acceptable. But straight back on Saturday at Beverley, so quick from the gates to get away from a high draw. I think it's great to see the horse do well. It'd be lovely to see him pick up a Group 1. I'd really like to see him do it.
Because I think he's entered up in the Flying Five, isn't he?
Which is now a Group 1 this year, I think, for the first time, and I think the horse deserves it. I'd like to see it do it. I'd like to see him do it for that. And also for the trainer, who I think his handling and training this horse has been very, very good. And I know a lot of people say about trainers, oh, he deserves more horses. But on the back of this horse, he really does.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed not just with this horse's handling and placing of other horses, is very, very good.
Yeah, good stuff. On to the next question then. Duretto is the latest to enter the Melbourne Cup frame. It says, who's your pick at this stage? Now, given that we aren't aware of the weights yet, I'll be forgiving if you don't have a cast iron pick. But one thing we can almost say for certain is it's probably going to go to a European horse this year, the Melbourne Cup.
England's looking for the first winner of the race, and if they don't win it this year, then they might have missed the boat. Every time a horse wins a decent race over here, and that sort of trip, we had the Ebor winner last week. This one here, this is the target, it seems, for every horse.
Yeah. Anyone who's run over a mile and a half upwards.
I don't know what the weights... I'd be fascinated by the weight. I wouldn't normally be looking at the Melbourne Cup as a big weights thing, but this year I'm intrigued as to how many of these horses are really going to make the cut. Because some of the Aussie horses... if all these horses get in there and make the cut, there's going to be room for a handful of Australian horses. Now, I know they buy up... In the last few years, they've been buying up a lot of the European horses anyway.
Yeah.
You've also got Torcedor.
Yeah, of course.
Now trained in Germany.
Yeah, yeah. Former Jessica Harrington,
You've got such a strong, strong selection to go for. Withhold, of the ones we know are going and trained for the race, I'm more interested in Withhold. I think he's such a classy horse. They all are, really.
Mm.
The Ebor winner last week, I wouldn't say they came out of the blue, but to some good, strong performances this season. But I'm probably more with Withhold of the ones we know. So that's the one I'd be with anyway at the moment. But yeah, I'm interested to see the lineup of the race. We could be looking at a dozen horses. I mean, 24 horses, I think, can go in the race.
Similar,
we could be looking at something, at least a dozen, just from England alone, before we even get some other European ones in there.
Yeah, I think the European Raiders is going to have a little bit of a stranglehold on the race, potentially. On to the next question. We mentioned this right at the start of the podcast. Harry Angel, favourite, of course, for the Sprint Cup coming up this weekend. He's only ever been beaten at Ascot in his career.
Yeah.
Again, it seems odd to say that he's 0-5 there. You can't exactly say that he doesn't like the track, because there's been... one or two reasons for all those defeats. Away from Ascot, though, unbeaten. Does he extend that this weekend?
He'd be strong favourite, but I want to see the makeup of the race closer to the time. He was really impressive in this race last year in the mud. That was his standout, well, probably a standout performance in Ironbrook anyway. And he is a top-notch sprinter. Hopefully, what happened in the gates last time won't be repeated this time round. It's going to be a strong race, as you'd imagine. There's been a couple of horses we just mentioned being supplemented. One we knew about, one we weren't too sure about. I don't know what sort of price he is at the moment.
He's 5-4, Harry Angel at the moment, yeah.
I wouldn't be backing him at the moment, because you'd imagine, I think there's 17 in the race now at the five-day stage. You're going to hit double figures. There's going to be a dozen or so. Will he be that much shorter on the day when we know all the variables, such as the ground? Just, let's talk, there could be a bit of rain around. It's no problem, obviously, for Harry Angel, but just in case there's a draw bias or something like that. I don't think he'd be that much shorter at the weekend to warrant backing at 5-4 a few days before, and just in case any problem arises. Is he the likeliest winner? Yes. Would I be backing him at the current odds? No. I'll have a look at the makeup of the race at the weekend. James Garfield, everything in a way went right for it last month at the Deauville, but that was a really, really good run. The drop back 100 yards will be no problem. The Greenham Stakes from earlier in the season, that win looks better and better now.
Yeah, sure.
At the time,
yeah,
it looked okay for him, but it looks much stronger than that now. I think he's, I'm assuming he's second in. And a price, I'd be interested to see how Speaking Colours goes.
Okay.
Joseph O'Brien's horse won well a few weeks ago. It's a level or two below this lot, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's improvement to come. So I wouldn't be backing Harry Angel at those sort of odds, certainly not at the moment. And even on the day, I'd be looking at something from an each-way angle, and it could be the likes of Speaking Colours, or maybe even the Tin Man, who surely has one of these big ones in
one
it.
One more in it, yes.
Things don't always go his way.
Fair enough. And finally, what are your view, if you have one, on the recent changes to race day stewarding panels, moving more towards getting more professionals involved?
No great view. Someone mentioned at the weekend, which I thought was a bit interesting, it was about when there's a steward's inquiry, not having the jockeys say their piece.
Yeah.
Which I suppose that might be of interest, because at the moment, a young kid, or a relatively young, an experienced apprentice, could be outspoken.
Yep, very much so.
By someone a lot more. I mean, we had after the simple Versant Ledger about three years ago.
Colm O'Donoghue against Andrea Rattaney. And Andrea's, English isn't his first language. Colm O'Donoghue with the Ballydoyle operation, he sounds very well drilled.
So I just wonder if there's the need for the jockeys to go in there and say their piece, because you know what they're going to say anyway.
Yeah, of course.
You know they're going to say,
I would have won the race.
Definitely have won the race if I wouldn't have been hampered or whatever. So, do they really need that? I don't know. But overall, Sam, apart from that, not really that much opinion on this.
Okay, good stuff. That's the Monday Jury wrapped up then for another week. We're going to turn our attention on to the action on Tuesday now, and we start at Goodwood. Goodwood's going to be our first protocol for the 4:10. This is a handicap over 2 miles, the feature race on the card at Goodwood on Tuesday. And this is above average Tuesday fare as well, John. This is a decent race.
It is. It's a 0-105 handicap. I think I'm right in saying we're already down one runner. I've got a feeling that Garbanzo, number 9, is out of the
race.
Right,
okay.
It's a 2 mile race. Yeah, Garbanzo, that's confirmed a non runner. I'm already beating myself up here. I'm putting up a horse who I've put up or backed on a few occasions this season, Austrian School. It's fair to say if it doesn't do it tomorrow,
he's off the team.
I really thought he'd be off the team a while ago. I can't believe I'm giving him another chance. Everything, I think, is right for it tomorrow. He needs this sort of trip, 2 miles. At Musselburgh last time, there was a decent little race. That was a three-year-old only contest, and he ran pretty well. He was just beaten second. I think what they should have been doing with this all season, by the last few months anyway, is running out over 2 miles against his elders, whereby he'd be not only getting the three-year-old allowance, but also the fact he'd be taking on more exposed horses.
Yep.
So he's second on his elders over a mile and a half. That trip was too short. Last time up in trip, he was taking on horses like himself, same age. This is the one time he's taking on his elders, who are exposed generally. If he doesn't do the business tomorrow, he is well and truly off the list. And although it's a 0-105 contest, there's a few of them have got question marks against them. Blue Rambler, we don't know what it's capable at the moment. Soldier in Action, it's also trained by Mark Johnston. I mean, he is capable on his day, but what sort of day is it going to be? And catching him right is not the easiest thing. For a 25 grand race and a 0-105 contest, this is winnable. And if Austrian School doesn't win it, then I'll give up on him.
One more chance handed then to Austrian School in the 410 at Goodwood. And we go to Kempton for the second of our race previews now. And it's the 6:45 that we're going to be taking a look at here at Kempton. Handicap over 7 furlongs. And I know your selection in here is for a partnership that many people like, and that is Chris Dwyer when he teams up with Sylvester D'Souza.
Yeah, I think Sylvester D'Souza's agent is Chris Dwyer's wife.
Shelley Dwyer, she's called. Yeah.
This is a run-on-the-mill 7 furlong handicap that you'll on the all-weather that you'll see every Tuesday or Wednesday at Kempton. 0-75 contest, Dark Side Dream, well enough drawn in stall 3. A couple of things I like about it, the return to Kempton, a couple of good efforts here from earlier in the season, in particular when Sylvester D'Souza rode up and second behind Sparkalot back in March. Sparkalot, if injury hadn't intervened, would have been better than your average Kempton handicap sprinter, I would feel. And when it went back to the track in June over 7 furlongs, that was a fair enough run. It's now down to a mark of 75, so it gets in a lower grade race. I think Kempton, 0-75 contest, D'Souza back on board, every chance. I think it's not going to be an easy race. There's a few solid horses in there. There's Gunmaker's coming over from Ireland actually with Gerald Mosse booked to ride, but I'm going to go that this is Dark Side Dream's chance for the Chris Dwyer Sylvester D'Souza combination.
Okay, good stuff. Those are John's two picks for the action on Tuesday, and you can hear John on Racing Radio alongside Bobby Beavers and Andy Holding throughout the course of the day. For all of the day's racing, we're live at 1:50. John, thank you for that. Pleasure as always, and enjoy it.
Thanks, Dan.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.